It occurred to me when we were doing our congregational prayer, as Katrina led us in praying for refugees, that at this point in his life, David himself is a refugee. He's been driven into the wilderness by Saul. And so, as we talked about last week, David has gathered around him a community, and some of that community has been driven out with David. Others of those people are described as, let's say, not the finest, the cream of the crop, shall we say, as will show up a little bit in this passage. So we're going to pick up in 1 Samuel 30, and we're going to be reading verses 1 through 25. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burned it, and had taken captive the women and everyone else in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives had been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, "Bring me the ephod." Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake them?" "Pursue them," he answered. "You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue." David and the 600 men with him came to the Besor Valley, where some stayed behind. 200 of them were too exhausted to cross the valley, but David and the other 400 continued the pursuit. They found an Egyptian in a field and brought him to David. They gave him water to drink and food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs and two cakes of raisins. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and three nights. David asked him, "Who do you belong to? Where do you come from?" He said, "I am an Egyptian, the slave of an Amalekite. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. We raided the Negev of the Kerethites, some territory belonging to Judah, and the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag." David asked him, "Can you lead me down to this raiding party?" He answered, "Swear to me before God that you will not kill me or hand me over to my master, and I will take you down to them." He led David down, and there they were, scattered over the countryside, eating, drinking, and reveling because of the great amount of plunder they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from Judah. David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day, and none of them got away, except 400 young men who rode off on camels and fled. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his two wives. Nothing was missing, young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else they had taken. David brought everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, and his men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, "This is David's plunder." Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow him and who were left behind at the Besor Valley. They came out to meet David and the men with him. As David and his men approached, he asked them how they were. But all the evil men and troublemakers among David's followers said, "Because they did not go out with us, we will not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and children and go." David replied, "No, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and delivered us into our hands the raiding party that came against us. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to battle. All will share alike." David made this a statute and ordinance for Israel from that day to this. So this story is an interesting story, and a little bit of context to that we've already talked about. David continues to be in the wilderness. If you read a little bit further, as we continue the story, David now, this is one of the last kind of episodes that we learn about in the wilderness. Saul is soon to be killed, and David will soon assume the throne after many years in the wilderness. Now, what's Ziklag is, as we talked about last week, has become David's kind of hideout in the wilderness. It's where he and his people have gathered. It's where their community is. And David had been, in the previous chapter, out fighting for David. Among his, other than his protection racket that we talked about last week, is also a mercenary. He's been fighting for one of the kings in the area, but has been sent home. And when he was out fighting, he left Ziklag unprotected. And as we just heard, the Amalekites came in, wiped it out, took their children and women captive, destroyed the town, and were headed off with the plunder. Now, when they come back, so David comes back to Ziklag with his 600 men, and as we've talked about, as the text mentions in this passage, there is an element in David's community, the followers of David, who are, they're not the best sort, and they become very dissatisfied, and the bitterness and takes hold when they come home to find their families gone and their town destroyed. These men become bitter and they become angry, and they let that take root, and very quickly David is no longer their beloved leader. Now they want to stone him. And so we can see that things swing back and forth very quickly with this group that has gathered around David. So David does, in this instance, what David does repeatedly in the wilderness. He seeks God's guidance. So instead of responding immediately to these dissatisfied men, David calls for his priest to seek God's guidance. Eugene Peterson describes it this way. He says that the catastrophe brought out the best in David. In the chaos of lamentation, anger, and bitterness, with storm clouds of murder rolling in across the horizon, we come on this wonderful line. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. Peterson goes on to say, David prayed, David worshiped, David called on his pastor, Abiathar, for counsel. David went deep within himself, met God, and found strength and direction to stride into the way of salvation. So David's response to this chaos and to this further defeat in the wilderness. Now imagine, it's so easy for us to, kind of gloss over some of the disappointment here. But imagine, David has been in the wilderness at this point for years. It has been a long time since he was a boy and Samuel came and anointed him king over Israel. And the only thing that he's seen is trouble and dislocation ever since. But when they come back to Ziklag and they find their families gone and the town in ruins, you can imagine the text describes the weeping that took place. These are people who are hanging on by a thread. And this could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. But instead of David giving in to that, he seeks God in the midst of the wilderness. And God tells him that he can pursue the Amalekites and he will overtake them. So as the story goes on, we read, David and his men set off to pursue the Amalekites to try to rescue their families and recover their goods. And so they do that. They get to the brook of Besor, and 200 of them are too exhausted to continue. The rest go on. They find this Egyptian slave in the wilderness who leads them to the Amalekites. The Amalekites are celebrating their win, right? They've set up camp in the wilderness. They're partying. They are having a good old time. They have no idea that David and his men are about to swoop down on them and wipe them out. It's interesting to me as we read these stories, the little details that are shared and then other details that aren't, right? I mean, we know nothing really about the battle other than that everybody was destroyed, except for 400 who ran away on camels. We know little details like when they rescued this Egyptian slave or they found this Egyptian slave. We know what was on the menu. We know what they fed him, but we don't, you know, really know much else about him. But the story goes on. David and his men rescue the women and children. They recover all the spoils, and they also recover everything else that the Amalekites had taken from the Philistines as well. So now it starts to get interesting, and it's interesting to see how things, how quickly things swing back and forth. So in verse 20, it says that as they're heading back to Ziklag, it says, the men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, this is David's plunder. So remember, these are the very same men who not that long ago wanted to kill David because when they came back, they found everything destroyed. Now they've just recovered their own stuff, their families and their children and all of their goods, but also extra plunder. And the men are now celebrating him. This is David's plunder. And so they get back to the Brook of Besor and they meet up with their teammates, their other men who couldn't go on. Now remember, these 200 who stayed at the Brook of Besor and were too exhausted to go on, they were not just exhausted because of traveling from Ziklag to Besor. These are hardened soldiers. But they've been off fighting before that, remember? They'd just been off on a campaign and came back. So it wasn't that, this particular journey is too hard. It's that they'd been already on the road and fighting for, we don't really know how long, but an extended period of time. And so by the time they get to the Brook of Besor, they're just spent. So it wasn't that they were just like, we can't go on. We're too tired because of this hard 15-mile journey from Ziklag to Besor. It was everything that came before that. But these same men who just talked about how this is David's plunder, now they get back to their colleagues, to the other 200 men, and they basically say, well, you know what? You guys didn't fight. You don't get any of this. Oh, well, you can have your wives and children, but everything else, you don't get anything of it. Their attitude is, you don't deserve it. You didn't even earn it, right? It's just looking at this very short window of time. So that attitude ignores two things. It ignores, first, that these men, as I just said, weren't just exhausted from the journey to Besor from Ziklag. They were exhausted from all the fighting that they had been doing prior to that. And second, they have very quickly forgotten that, or are not seeing that, in David's understanding at least, none of this plunder is theirs to begin with. It belongs to God. So the mistake begins back just a couple verses earlier when the men say, this is David's plunder. They're believing that this is David's stuff, while David recognizes, because he has soaked himself in God in the wilderness, he recognizes that none of this is his. It all belongs to God. David is so aware that everything he has is undeserved favor. This reminded me of one of my first, what I'll call, ministry experiences. I was a camp counselor at Lake Beauty Bible Camp, which is one of our Covenant Bible Camps up in Minnesota, and I had the privilege in one of the first weeks when I must have been probably eighth or ninth grade, volunteer junior counselor, and I had the privilege of being there when one of the campers in my cabin accepted or understood that they could have a relationship with Christ for the first time. And I was so excited about this. And so I went up to Denny, who was the camp director, and I said, "Denny, you wouldn't believe it. I led one of my campers to Christ." And I thought Denny would be like, "Good job, Corey. That's so great." Denny looked at me and smiled and said, "You didn't do anything. You just got to be a part of it. It's God's work, not yours." We always have this tendency, as the men with David did, to when we experience victory and blessing, very quickly we forget that it's not ours to begin with. So David, when these men want to say to their teammates, to the other soldiers, "You can't have any because you didn't come with us and fight," David says, "No, my brothers, you must not do that with what, not what I have given you, not what I have won, but what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and delivered into our hands the raiding party that came against us. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to the battle. All will share alike." Then David goes on. He doesn't just say, "Well, that's just this time." It says, the text tells us that David made this a statute and ordinance for Israel from that day to this. David recognizes the importance of community. David is generous with the spoils of war because he recognizes that, first of all, it isn't his to begin with, and second of all, they only have it because of God's favor. We have a tendency to take ownership of the things that God blesses us with pretty quickly. David's actions at the Brook of Besor are a foreshadowing of God's plan for the people of Israel. I would make the argument it's one of the very few times we see in the Old Testament the nation of Israel begin to become the nation that God intended it to be from the beginning. Remember, if you go all the way back to the Abrahamic covenant, what does God say to Abraham? "I'm going to bless you so that you can bless your family." No, he says to Abraham, "I'm going to bless you so that you will be a blessing to all the nations." Right? So from the very beginning, God's intention is that Israel would bless everyone. And so David institutes this as a statute and an ordinance that everyone will share alike in what God blesses them with. David is intimately familiar with God's generosity. That's how he can be so generous. After all, how else do you make sense of being plucked from obscurity and anointed king? I guess there's the only other option is David could have turned in on himself, much like Saul did. The mistake Saul made when he became king was starting to believe his own press, right? And the longer that went on, the more lost Saul became until God basically disavowed him. David, on the other hand, keeps that undeserved favor, that gift, the blessing of God before his face over and over and over again. He recognizes that God anointing him king is radical generosity. It is undeserved favor. This is the way God does business. He repeatedly shows a soft spot for the last, the lost, and the least, for the unnamed ones, just as David was. Now, this soft spot is most powerfully displayed in the one we call the Son of David. Jesus came seeking the lost and repeatedly demonstrated God's love for the last, the lost, and the least. Now comes the hard part. Far too often, we act more like David's men who wanted to refuse to share the spoils with those who stayed behind, those who don't deserve it. Now, here's the tricky part. We may not intend to do that. We might not even be aware that we are doing that. But our attitudes, the things we celebrate, and our behavior often communicate quite clearly to those who are not on the inside that we don't think they deserve God's favor. And then we wonder why we as a church aren't seeing people come to Christ. Brothers and sisters, what if we worried more about being seen and known as generous than being right? What if we, like David, were so soaked in the generosity and the undeserved favor of God that our immediate response is to share whatever it is that God blesses us with, rather than trying to decide who gets to share in it when it isn't ours to begin with? Because after all, we have earned nothing. All is gift. Paul tells us that it is by grace we are saved, not works, lest anyone should boast. Friends, the gift of God in Christ is that all of us have experienced the undeserved favor of God in Jesus. The only thing God asks of us is to then go and to share that with those who have not yet experienced it. It really is that simple. So, brothers and sisters, in the midst of this unprecedented time of division in our country, my prayer for us as the people of God is that we would become so aware of the undeserved favor that God has shown us, and that it would transform our approach to the world so that we might become those who share God's favor rather than those who decide who gets what. The example of David and the example of Jesus are of radical, undeserved generosity. And I believe that it calls us to seek to be those kinds of people. Please join me in prayer.